and rightfully so, that he's doing...
I started using this thing to broadcast any jokes I could think of, but a bunch of people yelled at me until I stopped. I guess they didn't appreciate me handing it up. Since the 70s, trillions of dollars have been poured into the adoption of information and communication technologies, the devices and systems essential to how we get anything done these days. Email servers, smartphones, software, cloud services, IoT. It's hard to wrap your head around just how many resources we've used transforming our workplaces, governments, homes, and lives to capture the potential of computers and the internet. But weirdly, if you look at measures of raw productive capacity, how many tons of steel or bushels of wheat or gallons of Coke are produced every year per hour of labor, you probably wouldn't notice any big changes in the rate of productivity growth between the 1920s and the present day. The world sure looks different than it did before computers became ubiquitous, but while the Industrial Revolution and electrification created these dramatic hockey stick spikes in how efficiently we could turn natural resources into useful stuff, the computer age and the information age barely moved the needle. The problem is known as the productivity paradox, or sometimes the Solow paradox, as it was first pointed out by economist Robert Solow, who said, "You can see the computer age everywhere, but in the productivity statistics." Many explanations have been proposed for the paradox. As with all economics, some question the way we're measuring productivity growth. Others think we just need to wait a little bit longer for the true potential of the technologies to be realized. But one explanation makes a lot of sense to me. The development of these systems has made it trivial to send messages to each other. In less than 10 seconds, I can use the device in my pocket to fire a string of words to the other side of the planet, almost certain that the message will travel through radio waves, over thousands of miles of cable that snake over mountains and under oceans, and appear instantly on someone else's screen. But whether they notice it, open it, read it, understand it, or act on it, those are all different questions, and the ease with which we can send messages is at odds with each of them. As we discuss in episode 249, when people drink too greedily from the nonstop internet fire hose of things you should know, it can cause stress, fatigue, and disengagement, leaving them exhausted and somehow still uninformed, in a state of information overload. Frantically binging news can consume all the mental energy we need for the hard work of integrating new data into a coherent picture of the world, leaving us on a perpetual treadmill of anxious, doom-scrolling confusion. Communication overload is similar. When you receive messages faster than you can realistically process them, you begin to drop them, ignoring whatever seems unimportant at first glance. As the rate of incoming messages climbs, even deciding whether they're important or not takes too much cognitive effort, so we end up dropping them more or less at random. That's a bit better than tuning out entirely, but when even important messages only have a 50-50 chance of engaging your attention, the entire messaging system becomes unreliable, as either a source of up-to-date information or to direct your attention somewhere it's needed. It's like having an ear that only works half the time, much less than half as useful as a functioning ear. For all the potential upsides of instantaneous, ubiquitous, frictionless messaging technology, the primary bottleneck of human communication isn't the speed at which we can distribute those messages, at least not since the invention of the telegraph. It's not about latency or how fast you can type or any process you can see, but the speed at which your audience can assimilate new information into a usable understanding of the world, how fast they can build knowledge. That work can be reduced by the sender. Good authors don't just write, they condense, organize, and ruthlessly delete text to present their ideas in the most natural and vibrant way, so the audience can click them into place with no wasted effort. But it still takes time to fully absorb new ideas, and few people approach everyday communication with that sort of diligence. It doesn't matter if I can write and send an email in 10 seconds, if my audience needs hours of quiet meditation to puzzle out what it means and what to do with it. This suggests a possible answer to our productivity paradox. Despite the spread of information and communication technologies, the speed of information and communication were never really the holdup, and whatever gains we made there were offset by the new duties they created. As productivity curmudgeon Cal Newport has noted, IBM's first internal email server melted under a flood of messaging 5 times the rate that designers had predicted, as users realized they could CC people to keep them in the loop, effortlessly multiplying their demands of knowledge generation. Sending a message is so easy. It makes sense to flood everyone's inboxes with constant updates, rather than risk offending anyone by leaving them out. So, we all have 1,000 poorly written emails in our inboxes that we're barely skimming, we send clumsy, rushed replies to them, and nobody has the time to reflect and make sense of anything in the torrent, as we're all fighting valiantly just to keep our heads above water. Email is far from the only offender in this regard. You can see a similar dynamic at play in social media feeds, group chats, MMS, a constant deluge of low-effort, inconsequential messages that leaves us feeling too inundated to pay close attention, or to compose careful messages of our own. There's nothing wrong with recreational chit-chat, but without a clear distinction between shooting the shit and communication, those platforms rapidly become useless for anything but occasionally informative distraction. The idea that we'd sit down in front of that for 8 hours a day and somehow end up more productive is laughable. Still, there are areas where modern communication technology has been an unmitigated godsend. In fields where a timely radio message can be the difference between life and death, those in the line of fire are instinctively protective of their comms, both from external hazards and the frantic messaging style that tends to lead to communication overload. Firefighting and mustache veteran Kurt Verone argues that radio discipline, the adherence to the rules and procedures of proper radio use, is hard for novice firefighters to appreciate in small-scale operations. If there's only a half dozen people hosing down an unruly barbecue, everyone can blast out updates, questions, and comments on the crew's radios whenever they feel like it, with little risk of talking over each other or missing something critical. But in larger, more complicated, and dangerous conflagrations, casual radio habits routinely get people killed. He cites dozens of reports where firefighters were unable to send or receive urgent messages due to a constant stream of radio chatter, resulting in casualties and deaths that might have been prevented with better discipline on the mic. There's something counterintuitive about how the most chaotic, stressful, dangerous situations actually demand less frequent communication, more planning to make every word count, more calm and clarity, and those habits need to be rehearsed where they're least necessary. Many organizations that are expected to operate in a crisis write explicit communication guidelines for their members, and the similarities between those guidelines are striking. There's no reason you'd expect firefighters to talk to each other the same way nuclear plant technicians, emergency medical responders, or commercial pilots do. The convergence of those policies under wildly different technical, procedural, and environmental pressures suggests that there may be some universal principles for maintaining efficient and effective communication, even when things are literally on fire. They all descend from military protocols, but their continued use in so many fields for decades implies they work, and maybe they contain useful insights about how to reap the benefits of instant communication without suffering its worst downsides. The first thing these policies share is restraint, an imperative to treat communications technology as a last resort for communication. You're probably going to hate this as much as I do, but instead of using a radio or messaging, they all recommend conveying information, wherever possible, face-to-face or in a one-on-one call. Look, we all hate it when someone demands we drop whatever we're doing just to talk, but that's kind of the point. Emails, text messages, and so on may be poorly understood, misunderstood, or ignored, but when you've got someone by the ear, you can tell if they're paying attention, hearing and understanding what you're trying to say. It also leaves messaging platforms open for higher priority messages that can't wait for a one-on-one talk. With that policy in place, everyone on the radio has a responsibility to attend and listen carefully to those messages that are sent, not just so they can receive information that's meant for them, but to avoid repeating or asking people to repeat what's already been said. That's a tall order, especially in the middle of a catastrophe, which means people who chew into everyone else's bandwidth are decidedly unpopular. As Verone says, people who like to hear themselves talk are the enemy in this regard and need to be given a short leash by their superiors. I'm just going to think about that one for a second. To conserve the group's cognitive resources, if a message needs to be sent, the sender is expected to use their precious airtime judiciously. Before they even touch the transmitter, they should take the time to collect their thoughts and format what they want to say for clarity. Who is the intended recipient? What is needed from them? Where, when, and why it's needed? In as few short words as possible. If it's a radio message, the rhythm, speed, volume, and pitch of the sender's voice should be easy to understand. More slow, deliberate speech, less frantic shouting and cursing. Some organizations suggest rehearsing a message a few times to be sure you can deliver it well, without any filler ums or scrambling for the right word. Of course, maintaining the composure to find clear language and transmit it calmly, while a building is burning down around you, demands incredible courage and discipline. But if you don't have time to send a clear message, you definitely don't have time to follow it up with clarifications. To confirm the information has been communicated, the recipient always replies with some sort of acknowledgement, ranging from a simple okay to a detailed recap of the message in their own words, if it's complicated enough that they want to be sure they're not missing anything. As anyone who has been left on read can tell you, the simple act of confirming that a message has been received conveys a ton of information and eliminates many potential failure modes. No, they're not unconscious. Yes, their equipment is working. Yes, they received it. Yes, they understand what you want. Are they coming to your spoken word poetry jam? Probably not. These tenets of radio discipline seem like a mirror opposite of the way most of us use communication technologies. The most tense and turbulent situations tend to generate the most frantic, least refined commentary, as media companies, streamers, and everyone posting on social media claws over each other to get a hand on the ball and win some attention. Large language models, spammers, and advertisers spew stochastic noise across every open channel, training us to ignore each of them in turn. Is that text message a family member asking if you're okay, or is it a super PAC asking you to pledge campaign funds? Probably not worth the effort to pull out your phone and check. Because nobody's paying close attention, we don't spend a lot of time thinking about how to say things clearly. And even with read receipts, there's always some uncertainty as to whether our messages are being considered or ignored. Hopefully, I'll never be in a situation that demands radio discipline. But reading the policies adopted by people who really care about communication technology has changed the way I approach it. I'm paying more attention to which channels scatter my capacity to build knowledge, and which ones supply dense building blocks with enough breathing room to mull them over and be better equipped to act in the world. I'm more diligent about blocking notifications and unsubscribing from mailing lists that aren't always worth pulling my phone out to read. I'm spending more time thinking about what I want to say and how I want to say it before I even touch a keyboard. I'm rehearsing calm, clear, easily understood communication, and acknowledging incoming messages as soon as I can read them. I'm even calling people if I need to tell them something important. I don't know if any of that is going to make a long-term difference in a world where the incredible productive potential of computers has been turned to the task of distracting us, where our most important communication network is built on advertising revenue, where scammers and charlatans are constantly struggling to fill every empty moment of the 24-hour news cycle with bullshit and bloviating. But I'll tell you what. If I was in trouble, I'd rather have 10 firefighters who know how to use a radio than 10,000 Twitter accounts reposting a paragraph of Grok's advice. Do you think the inefficiencies created by the spread of information and communication technology explain the productivity paradox? Does the practice of radio discipline hold any useful lessons for the way that we approach these technologies in high-stakes situations, or any situation? Should spammers be press-ganged into fighting forest fires? Please, consider what you want to say and how to format it so it's easy to understand. Then, leave a comment below and let me know what you thunk. Thank you very much for watching. Please, check out the Thunk Discord channel. Don't forget to blah blah subscribe blah share. And don't stop thunking.